This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Walking Dead, Season 11, Episode 18, A New Deal, is over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps. Yes, it's Founders Day, everyone, and we are having a big party to celebrate, and I can't wait to take a stab and break down everything that happened in this episode. And with me, of course, we have two-thirds of the rest of the panel here. We're going to do our best to give you a good show tonight. So in this corner, I've got Josh Wigler.
Man, Jess, thank you for introducing me. I'm sad that Chappelle is not here. I'm thrilled that AJ Mass is here. Hi, AJ.
I'm an angry, delusional little boy.
You always have been. What I'm upset about is that our founder is not here, and I just want to put out the bat signal. Rob Sesternino, where are you? Where are you?
You could ask RJ, but he won't tell.
He won't tell me. He'll just keep reading his Invincible comic books. One of my favorite running gags in the Walking Dead universe is that, like, Robert Kirkman was like a prolific, successful comic book writer within the Walking Dead universe. It's incredible. Science Dog, Invincible the comic, just remarkable stuff.
You know, I feel like it just cements that it's like a dream world, because Robert Kirkman is going to be like, I'm writing this zombie apocalypse universe, and also I'm the greatest author who ever lived within the confines of it.
It's great. I have no issues. No notes. No notes.
Yeah. I mean, if next episode somebody's like breaking open Oblivion Song, then we're going to have the full.
Yo,
the full plate.
Oblivion Song's good. I love Oblivion
Song.
It
is. Yeah. I do too.
Yeah.
And we do have to talk about the comics a lot this episode, Josh. I feel like there's so much in here that's blatantly not comic related.
Totally.
We can't get around talking about it anymore. And we used to partition this off. We used to have a comic book zone.
Do you want me to sing
the
song?
End of the episode.
Real quick?
You can sing the, go ahead.
A comic book zone. Something now with Rick and Michonne. Something more rhymes with comic book zone. Something more, it's Despacito. Yeah.
That was gold.
Uh-huh.
That was gold, Josh.
Robert Kirkman writes about the zombie apocalypse in the comic book zone. The Walking Dead comic book zone. Listen, I'm just trying to give a show. We did have one person be like, if you're just going to scream about the show, could you just keep it to 5 minutes? Like, we've got more to talk about this week than last week. All right. They should have stacked these. I don't know why they didn't stack these. This episode has things to talk about. We could have had stuff to talk about if we had this, if it was a 2-hour event. We're not cheating and talking about the AMC Plus episodes on the same day that they show up on AMC, and maybe we should have. But we got actual stuff to talk about today. And Jess, you're absolutely right that, like, we're clearly, once again, Walking Dead loves to do this. Like, we're veering pretty far away from the source material. This is kind of by design. Angela Kang, the showrunner of Walking Dead right now, is doing some interviews talking about, like, we don't got the characters from the final arc of the Walking Dead comic books. We can't do what Kirkman did. I respect that. Like, okay, well, let's see what you let's see what you can do because, you know, the season 9 Whisperer War was good, was really good without a couple of the central characters from the comic books. Can they close this out in a way that is different from the comic books, but hits maybe some of the same tastes, same notes, Jess? I don't know.
I think they have to. They have to hit those beats because the comics really, they drove home. Like, there was an end point in the comics, and I'm not always as confident the show has that much of an end point in mind.
Yeah.
It doesn't always feel like we're on course to do that. And this week, it was almost like the show was telling us, no, we don't have that. And look how much we don't have that. We're going to take every semblance of anything that was left that might have been close to what happened in the comics, and we're going to destroy it in front of you so that you know you're not getting the comic ending.
Yeah. So, AJ, I need the update from you. Are you, did you make it all the way through on the Walking Dead comics, and do you ever plan to?
I might at some point. I definitely had at some point gone through the Negan Glenn of it all,
yeah,
and read those, especially in the large time of waiting that we had in between seeing it happen on the TV show and then waiting to find out who got the bat. Yeah, I caught up at that point. I haven't read ahead, so I've from that point, so I've been pretty much in the dark here. I will say there was a scene about, I don't know, halfway through tonight's episode that made me kind of laugh, because to me it was almost as if the writers in the writer's room were just transcribing what they were saying in the writer's room when they were talking about Daryl and Carol talking about being parents and will they make the right decisions. Like, well, you know, you have choices to make, and you make the choice that you make at the time and just hope that is the best choice. And I felt that's exactly what the writers were talking about as to where they go from here, because for the first half of the episode, I was just like, you know, a lot of this just seems very by the numbers. What I like about the show is when it goes to a point where I don't know what's going to happen next. And I feel from that point on in the episode, they kind of did things where it's like, you know, I now don't know what's going to happen next. And now I'm starting to kind of like it again.
We're so up and down, you know, just when I thought I was out. They pull me back in.
It was that speech that like really drove me in. Like, they were like, look, we're going to make some decisions here, folks. And we're doing the best we can with the information we have. We're going to make these decisions and we'll see how it turns out. Maybe you guys will like it. Maybe you won't. But what do you want us to do? We're the parents and we have to do it.
So we did the comic book zone song. We cannot talk about this episode without talking about the end game of the Walking Dead comic books. It is a huge part of the narrative, I think, certainly for 2/3 of the panel today, and I'm sure for a bunch of people. And I think it did inform a lot of what you're talking about, AJ, where like, I was like, okay, all right, I'm surprised. Because if they were sticking to the comic book script, Jess, Sebastian Milton doesn't die this way, and certainly doesn't die at all, actually, in the comics.
No, but some other people die. At the hands of Sebastian Milton.
Yes.
And this is what we're talking about. The last, I would argue, the last and most important major character death of the entire Walking Dead comic series happens at the hands of a total nothing burger that is Sebastian Milton.
Yeah.
And it felt like they were developing the character in a very similar way, almost to the point where you might speculate that he's going to also cause a shocking and horrible character death. And almost up to the moment of his death, I thought maybe that's where they're going with it. And then he died. And I feel like that's such a blatant middle finger to the comic readers.
See,
but in an affectionate way.
I think, yeah, I would say it's in an affectionate way would be my feeling on it. And I know we come in hot sometimes and we're really mean to the show, but I feel like it's only fair to be like, okay, all right, I'm leaning back in, because I feel like I'm leaning back in at this point. Sebastian getting killed off here before he gets the chance to do like his really, really massive important thing in the comic, which is, again, major, super hardcore, incredibly top of the line Walking Dead comic book spoilers about to come in right now at this moment in time. He kills Rick Grimes. He kills him. He shoots Rick Grimes and kills Rick Grimes. And it is like, it is shocking and horrifying. And it happens with two issues still to go. And it is the last major death of the Thing. And so part of the puzzling, I think, Jess, you and I probably were doing, like, all right, well, who is Sebastian going to kill instead of Rick? What are they going to build towards? And no, not only does Sebastian die here and not get the chance to kill off a major character, there is like sort of like this extra level of like deliciousness to me as a comic book reader, where it seems like Judith had a chance to maybe kill this walker before it took a bite out of Sebastian. And like, it's a little bit of like, Carl is the one who has a moment where he comes to Sebastian after he's killed Rick. And he's like, I know you think I'm here to kill you. I'm just going to hope that you rot in prison for the rest of your life. And it's like kind of like this big moment of like, I'm done killing people. I just want to live, and you shouldn't have done that, and you're terrible. And here on the show, it's kind of like, Judith is like, nah, maybe Carl should have killed you in the comic. I'll just let this happen. And I loved it. I did. I thought it was great. I thought that that was really, really fun. And I was really surprised. Oftentimes I do feel like many of like the major iconic moments from the Walking Dead comics do make it onto the show. It's just often they're like a little bit mixed, like Herschel's death in the prison happens to a different character, but absolutely happens. Obviously Glenn gets killed the way he gets killed, with like a couple of extra wrinkles on the show. Like, they tend to hit those notes. Clearly we're either abandoning the ending of the Walking Dead comics altogether, or we're really remixing it. But we're remixing it to a point where, like, I definitely thought that Sebastian was endgame material. He's not. I'm off balance. I like to be off balance. This is fun. This is good. I enjoyed it. I had a good time with this episode. I don't know why they didn't air this as a 2-hour premiere. I think we would have had a lot more fun with a 2-hour version of this episode. But I think appropriately titled A New Deal, AJ. I feel like I'm ready to give The Walking Dead a new deal this week.
Yeah, a new deal. I, for one, I guess, not being hampered by the comic book, was very proud to select Sebastian in our death draft. So one for me. I thought this episode visually remembered that it was based on a comic book. There were the A+ to the shot framing and the constitution of these scenes, especially in the beginning, where, you know, you had a lot of these two shots and people up close in the camera and a lot of, you know, some Dutch angles. I thought it reminded me, this is based on a comic book. Yeah, the cool. Thank you for remembering that. Which really got me back in the spirit of, you know, the earlier seasons of the show. I thought this felt, much of the way through, this felt like a series finale. Like, it felt like everything was going to be wrapped up in this one. You know, you had, oh, and Lydia's leaving us, and goodbye, and we'll never see you again, perhaps. Like goodbye. Like, all these goodbyes, and everyone having the choice. You can stay here, or you can go, and everyone's going to make their individual choices. And it really felt like we were wrapping everything up in this episode, which was when I was feeling kind of, so we're just wrapping things up. And then it kicked into this kind of, you know, throw all everything to the fan. You know, suddenly we have faux Stephanie stepping in with the goon and shooting people for no apparent reason. And it's also like, wait, what the hell is happening now? And I thought that was an interesting injection of something that seemed so unpredictable in an episode that I thought was going to be the same old predictable stuff.
Yeah,
it was definitely not what I expected, especially after that first half, that first season premiere situation that was just chess pieces. This, at least, like, they started with chess pieces and then they're like, oh no, we're not doing chess pieces now. And I think we knew there was probably going to be something there. We had to kill someone at some point, and this is about as unsafe a death as I think we can get at this point. We've talked a lot about how we know certain characters are safe, but I think to get us back into the spirit of things, we really got to get a death, and we got a death. And we also got a lot of redshirt deaths, which also I didn't see coming. Like, nobody dies on this show anymore, and then a lot of people died this episode.
Yeah. We also got Lance Hornsby, AJ, Lance murdered a candy apple.
Yes, he did murder the candy apple. And you know, I, as heavy-handed as it was with the bite, I mean, what a cartoonish bite of an apple, but cool, because like I said, I can't praise the show for being comic booky and cartoony and then, you know, criticize that scene. But then to then juxtapose that with
how bad can the zombie apocalypse be if they've still got candy apples, I gotta say.
Where are they getting sugar?
Look, I know.
Love a candy apple.
But juxtaposing that shot with then, you know, the walkers taking an equally delicious red bite out of the flesh of Sebastian, I thought that was kind of cute.
Yeah. That was fun. So I think that's a good observation, Jess, of like, Sebastian is somebody who we can take off the board at this moment in time. I think like the timing is part of what's really surprising. AJ, I think like you're seizing on something that I was vibing with as well, where it felt like, oh, you're just wrapping up this like Sebastian's in trouble arc really smoothly, like very easily. But there's definitely still more to do. And I think like Sebastian's death and how is that going to leave Pamela off tilt, and what's that going to open up for her with like, is she going to be vulnerable to like Lance Hornsby's Grima worm tonguing, you know, like, is she going to like, you know, kind of allow him to puppeteer the throne to some extent? So I think like it empowers Lance Hornsby as an endgame villain, which let me insert Chappelle rolling his eyes super hard. I can hear that right now, even though he's not with us today. So I think that they've done some stuff that is going to lead us to where we're going next. But it is like a little less clear than where we were. Some things based on how they played out in this episode are starting to clarify for me. For example, Jess, Ezekiel is dead, right? Like, this doesn't end with well for the king. He's like, oh, I mean,
he's definitely gonna die. He's too happy.
This is great. You know, I'm gonna stay here. I got a purpose. Look at my animals. You and me are at peace now, Carol. Everything's fine. He's dead. This man
is going dead. He's full Blue Sky Bob at this point.
Yeah.
He's definitely dead.
Yeah, quite frankly, I'm surprised he didn't die in the melee. Because you had, I mean, how many people are there at this festival? Because it looks like there's maybe 25 people watching this wrestling match. And then all of a sudden, there's 100 people bouncing into each other in the one street, and they keep turning around and folding back in. Like, extras, back to the left! Extras, back to the right! We don't have any more extras! Get back in shot! The whole melee is fantastic and frenetic, but I saw the same people over and over again. Does he die in this thing? Do you take that step? I don't think you do, because you want to spread out the deaths of your characters a little bit.
Yeah, we can't one bite of the candy apple at a time, AJ.
Exactly. But I
candy apple, you make that last.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised if he had died. I wouldn't have been surprised. Like I said, I was surprised because I didn't know where it was going. But what I would not have been surprised with is if Ezekiel had died, or if that wagon heads out with Jerry and Aaron and Lydia and her new boyfriend. Mm-hmm. When did that happen? But, you know, if two of them had died as they wheeled out, that wouldn't have been surprising to me either.
What if the wagon just like pulls out and then goes over a cliff?
That would have been awesome.
And here's the thing about the character deaths now. I think they've gotten so up in their heads about killing off characters that it's like, you can't kill Ezekiel in a melee like that because he's a major character. He has to go out on a good note. He has to like do something noble. And there's only so many times somebody can go out doing something noble before it gets repetitive.
Right. But I think that in killing Sebastian, I think it impacts our characters in a way it's a little more interesting than if Ezekiel died here, because now they're like really endangered again, because they had struck a new deal, right? We'll give you Lance Hornsby and Sebastian, and you villainize Lance Hornsby, and you get to keep your son, and you get to turn him into the leader of men that you want him to be. The return of the king. I don't know why I'm Lord of the Ringing so hard. I'm behind by an episode, no spoilers. Probably two by the time this podcast comes out. The fact that he's dead, and that Daryl and Carol and Judith and many of these people weren't on that wagon, means that they're very much in the belly of the beast in a community where the person at the top of the food chain is going to be looking for people to blame. And so they're in trouble here. They're like in this place, and it's going to get messy for sure for them. And I do think that like now it's a little scary for like the wagon people too. Is the hit squad going to be sent out after them? Also, though, what are they going to find in Oceanside? Probably a lot of dead bodies, and maybe they're going to turn their wagon around and be like, we got firebombed the Commonwealth. So I think that killing Sebastian here accomplishes enough, let's get everybody in danger, than like, if you kill Ezekiel in that same exact moment, it maybe like gets a little bit lost in sort of the narrative momentum of killing Sebastian. Killing Sebastian does actually accomplish quite a bit for where we are in the story right now.
It definitely does. And it starts to answer a few questions too. We are agreeing that there's some sort of like all of these zombies descending on the Commonwealth on Founders Day, including like the inside job zombies. This is all like false flag, right? Like this is Pamela Milton is instigating these zombies and then is going to find a way to blame people for it, right?
Interesting.
I don't think she's smart enough to do that. I think this is all just Hornsby. I think it's all Hornsby pulling the strings. You know, how could I be responsible? I was inside a prison. It certainly could not be me. What people do I have? You know, so I think he's got plausible deniability. He can certainly now turn it all on, you know, Eugene and his girlfriend, Max, not Stefani, because, you know, she pulled off the tape recorder incident. And
right.
Thank goodness they pulled that off. And this is the first time I've seen one of these pulled off correctly, where there really was no way Sebastian to know that he was being recorded, even though the tape recorder was in plain sight. And there was time for her to rewind it to the proper point when it started playing. Usually they do this where they record over a tape and then they start press play and it's right queued up to the exact spot. She had time to queue it up. So I'm okay with the way they did that there. But clearly they crossed a line by playing that, and everybody heard it. And of course, Pamela looks over. She probably knows who was in the booth. So, you know, that again puts our people in jeopardy. So I think it was a good plan.
I want to talk about that because that is a trope that I cannot stand anymore in the current times in which we are living.
What, the let me record you secretly and play the recording for everyone to hear.
Yeah, and then everyone will immediately turn against you when they find out how awful you really are.
Yes.
That doesn't actually happen in real life. I think current events have proven that time and time again.
Yes.
And it's just upsetting when it happens now because it's a fantasy. It wouldn't really happen.
Of course it's a fantasy, but the way they set it up, like every year we play this tape recorder. So, okay. That there's a reason for that tape recorder to be there and to be played. So it wasn't like they piped into this, you know, they had a hack into a system. It's like, hey, play that tape recorder. So at least I like the fact that they set this whole thing up where they were expecting a tape to be played. We saw how it was recorded. We saw, you know, she decided, yes, play it. And, you know, it's not like he gave a speech where everyone was like, yeah, we love him. It was like, boo, boo. Oh, what did he say?
We'll back it up again and play it again for you. So you know.
Well, yeah, that part I did not like. The final reprise replay, did not like that. But yeah, I like I said, it's a goofy trope. I like when you take a goofy trope, though, and at least execute it differently than I've seen.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Can I ask your thoughts, the panel, about the wrestling match at the heart of Founders Day?
Well,
because I loved it. I loved it. I don't understand it. I don't know why this is like, well, so today we acknowledge this very serious occasion that is, you know, the reason why we have survived a decade plus through the end of the world. We give thanks to the founder of this great community. And by golly, was he not the biggest WWE fan on the mother effing planet. Let's trot him out. The wrestling boys.
Well, what
we need Matt and Mari here to like talk us through how all of that went.
What I have heard is that this was not what they wanted in this space, but because of COVID, they had to come up with something that had a few people. Like, I think ideally you'd want something a little bit more, I don't know what's more American than wrestling, but you'd want like a baseball game. Something a little bit more getting the whole community involved.
Some peanuts and Cracker Jacks to go with your candy apple.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, baseball, America, apple pie, and Chevrolet.
But I think what I have read, and I don't know how true it is, but speculation is that there was supposed to be something else in this place, but they needed a sporting event that didn't have 11 people on the field at any given time.
I heard, AJ, that there was going to be this baseball storyline that was Commonwealth versus Alexandria, and that Aaron was going to hit more home runs in this game than anyone had ever hit before in this league.
Yeah, well, that
did
one...
I sports okay?
you sort of sports okay, yes, absolutely.
How does he hold a
judge
bat?
Me harshly?
Does he have a spiky bat hand?
He's got a spiky bat hand, yeah.
He hits it, direct contact. He doesn't even take the bat. That's Negan's. He just uses his spiky ball hand and just knocks it out of the park.
Or something, yes.
He has a baseball bat attachment.
See, my concern in a situation like that, though,
then he runs the bases like Junior in Problem Child.
Yeah, I would be fine in a baseball game if I could be the mascot because I'd be well protected. I'd be encased in a polyurethane shell, and therefore no one could bite me. So I'd be all fine with reprising my mascot role for such a baseball event.
Let me ask you this. Has this been asked of you on a Zombie Apocalypse podcast before, AJ? If you were Mr. Met out there in the zombie apocalypse, are you really safe or are you in deep doo-doo when the horde descends upon you? Like, how do you get out of that one? Eventually, enough zombies probably break through, no?
I mean, look, if it depends what year the zombie apocalypse broke out, because quite frankly, if it was one of the lean years for the Mets, there'd be no one in the stadium to turn, and therefore I'd be fine.
Yeah, sure.
I know a lot of bad things happen in a stadium in the Walking Dead universe.
Yes.
I get that. But I could probably Madison my way out of it.
Do you think that's how Madison survives the fire, Jess?
Mascot
is
costume,
that she puts on a mascot costume and is able to just get out of there?
I hope so. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, the wrestling match. I mean, look, we've already established, kudos for continuity's sake, we've established that wrestling is still kind of popular amongst the Walking Dead universe and the zombies themselves.
Shout out to Mickey. Yes. Where was Mickey? Would have been a very natural Fear the Walking Dead crossover here, folks.
Would have been. Yeah. Would have been. Unless Aisha's going to join the Criminal Minds reboot. Maybe she's busy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You'll have to check in and find out.
Coming in November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was over the top. Brian Gewirtz would probably be embarrassed by the writing in that wrestling skit. My buddy from college who wrote for the WWE for many years. But yeah, it was fun. Like you said, it was fun. I love the reaction. Like Pamela and Sebastian had, oh, what on earth is going on here? Could they possibly? It's such a royals versus commoners kind of situation there. And I delighted in their reaction to it. Oh, this is what fun this is.
How fun. Such a delight.
They do know how to do fun in the Commonwealth. Like, it seems like they're having a party every other episode.
There do seem to be a large number of fairs. It's like the person who grants the permits for the block parties in the Commonwealth, very liberal with those permits.
Although here's my one concern and question, and when we were watching the build-up, because Ezekiel seemed to be setting up the exact same setup he did the last fair. So for this one, no House of Horrors, because that could have been a lot more deadly if they would have thought that the zombies coming at them were just people from the House of Horrors on break.
Yes. Unfortunately, AJ, they were not able to strike up a new deal with the House of Horrors vendors ahead of time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Understood.
That's tough. tough. So they weren't able to make it to the festival.
Well, I mean, that saved a lot of lives. Not Sebastian's, but that probably saved a lot of lives.
Yeah. If it's not Governor Pamela who was responsible, so we would think that then, like, it was Lance Hornsby who sends, like, the Wet Works guys in to, like, shoot the people up. And we feel, like, locked in on that? Or do we want to entertain any other possibilities?
That's what I thought was going on. I mean, they came and kind of went to his window and kind of did the caw-caw, caw-caw. So, I mean, I thought that's where that was happening.
Yeah.
Probably. That makes sense.
Probably. Almost definitely.
And especially because Pamela Milton didn't have an escape strategy, you know. It was more like, you're supposed to protect me. Come make sure I'm okay.
Yeah. Mercer's like, I gotta protect the people, not you. And Lance is, like, safely ensconced in his jail, eating a candy apple, like, everything is going according to plan. So I think that that's probably right. I briefly wanted to entertain the world where, like, could there be some sort of shadow nefarious final boss that we're not taking into account? Like, would there be any reason, Jess, for Stefani, for Max, to be like in, like, as this change agent to, like, really, like, sabotage the town? Hard to envision, but, like, she would be one of the only other culprits I could even imagine existing in this.
Well, you'd have to dig pretty deep to find a motive there. Is she just one of those some men want to watch the world burn types?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. The only character I could see that we, you know, it has to be a character that we know. You can't introduce a new character to this point.
Mercer, maybe.
Well, Mercer doesn't even make sense either, the way he acted. I think the mysterious Tommy is the only person I think who could possibly be. I don't want it to happen.
It could be Leah coming back from the dead and getting revenge.
Oh gosh, yeah. Oh.
Well, we do know ghosts are possible in this universe.
Yes.
But they keep mentioning Tommy and they never show Tommy, and they're kind of building him up in a way. So I wouldn't want that to be the case. But there's an argument to be made that they're setting it up.
Yeah. Interesting.
They don't talk about him enough for that to be plausible. Like, I feel like they'd have to do a lot more work to establish that.
It's Lance. You know, it's Lance Hornsby. Yeah. It's just fun to talk about, fun to think about. Who else could be involved? Was it Sebastian and a plan gone horribly wrong?
Hoisted by his own petard.
Yeah, is this the greatest self-own in modern Walking Dead history? I don't think so. Probably not. What do we think about the fact that the Rick Grimes gun has been trotted back out into the narrative? We like this?
Well, they're doing a lot of legwork to make sure we remember Rick Grimes was a thing.
Right.
And the fact that we're getting that in conjunction with these new little set pieces at the beginning of, like, remember that guy, remember this guy, remember when you watched the show 10 years ago and you thought it was wonderful, and, you know, let's come back full circle and love the show that much again. They've got to be setting it up. Like, there's got to be a Rick Grimes cameo at the end.
Do we think that's inevitable, AJ, that Rick Grimes shows back up? Andrew Lincoln was like, I'm coming back for the movie and I'm off the show. I'm truly done with the show. But that was years ago now.
Sure. It was years ago. I mean, look, with the 500,000 spinoffs that are in the works, proposed and everything, for all I know, he's already shot 6 episodes of his own spinoff, and we're going to see the first 5 minutes of it as a flash forward at the end of this whole thing. You know, it's certainly possible. I would love to see him come back in the penultimate episode. I think emotionally, it would be great to see Judith reunited with him, with Michonne, if that, you know, get the gang back together. And then do one more big thing, you know, before they face the unknown future and we go off credits roll. That's what there's, with the flashbacks. That's kind of what I'm expecting now.
With 8 episodes left, like, how big could the big thing be?
Yeah.
If you bring them back though, if like you wrap this up in 7 episodes, you know, with like a little kicker, where he comes back, you could just have a 1-hour complete zombie-thon. Like, just a whole big, whatever it is, just 1 hour of mayhem go out, you know, and with him getting in a tank and running off down the road. Like, you know, bookend the damn series.
I think bringing a tank in is good. Yeah. And we probably have to maul one more horse for good measure.
There you go.
Probably just one more.
And with one of Judith's little friends, a little girl walking, just her leg. Like, you know, just really just show some of the imagery from that first episode. Would be nice.
Jess, I would love if in like the final episode or second to last episode, Rick Grimes shows back up. Big tearful emotional reunions. He's hugging everybody. Everyone's so excited. And then he just like looks around the group. He's like, where's Michonne? And everyone's like, she went out looking for you. And he just like throws the gun on the ground. God damn it.
I left you the message
on the phone that I was coming.
Throws it down, spin off. Gotta go. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be satisfying to me. That would be satisfying. He shows back up. The spinoff show is actually like a true blue sequel to The Walking Dead. And it's just an exacerbated, exhausted dad, Rick Grimes. Like, damn it. All right, let's go.
No, that is your show. That is your show. Rick goes off to find Michonne. And that's every odd numbered episode. Every even number episode is Michonne and her quest to find Rick. And sometimes they pass in the night. In the same town, like one episode behind, just weaving in and out and never quite catching up to each other.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. The Robert Patrick triplet is like, oh yeah, Michonne, you just missed her. She was here about 2 weeks ago.
Bling, 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 bling. Bling, 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 bling.
I like the episode where Rick is just at the bus station with Judith the entire time. And someone shows up at the end and says, Michonne will not see you today. Miss Michonne will see you tomorrow. Waiting for Michonne.
And we saved the seat. We did the whole play and she never showed.
It'll be good.
Sorry, that's a different Waiting for Michonne.
Remember when Daryl just stabbed Lance Hornsby in the hand?
Yeah.
It's not good behavior. That.
He's doing all kinds of gruesome crap to Lance Hornsby, and not that the guy doesn't deserve it, but it's like every week, it's like, are we just going to like cut off another extremity? What's going on here?
Yeah, he's going to get a different scar each week. You know, it's the face, then it's the hand. Next week, something's going to happen to his left leg.
It's all culminating in the genitals.
Oh, what a sentence.
Yeah. I'm trying to top myself from last week.
It's all culminating in the genitals.
Yeah, the last episodes. Fear the culmination. Yeah. Jess, you okay over there?
Totally fine.
Yeah, doing great. Hanging in. Daryl is cracking out. Like, I feel like Daryl might be like going to Paris for his spinoff show because like he's gonna be like banned from America. He's like, everyone's like, oh, I like you, Daryl. You're just like stabbing people though.
Quit stabbing people in the hand. You gotta leave.
You gotta go.
How's he getting to Paris? Do we have any suggestions?
Yes. It's going to appear that he explodes in a bridge, and then Jadis is going to put him on a helicopter, and you're going to hear, bow, ding, 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 bow, 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 bow. And it's that space junk song as he just gets choppered. Yes, helicopter all the way from the Eastern Seaboard to Vive la Resistance in France.
So it kind of feels like you can't fly a helicopter that long.
No, I don't think that you can. Yeah,
I think is he going to take a boat?
Renegade submarine.
Yeah, is it John Locke's submarine?
Well,
Portland, but yeah.
Gigantic human slingshot. Just toss it.
Or gets hit on the head at the beginning of episode one of the spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
wakes up and is in France and has no idea how he got there. So they
no need to explain. Yeah, good, good. I'm glad we yes-anded this to the proper conclusion.
I don't think we're done yet, though, because I don't know if you noticed the title of next week's episode yet.
Variant.
Yep. Are we going to see the Omicron zombies?
Ooh. Well, the trailer does seem to suggest that people are talking about, like, I heard of a zombie that opens a door. And so maybe now all roads are leading here to, like, the zombie evolution. Forget about the zombie revolution, right? That, like, now that's going to be brought into the language of the main show in this final stretch to give some juice to the spinoffs. Which is frustrating, unless it has like real utility to these final episodes. I don't need it, but I know what world we live in here.
Although it would go a long way towards explaining, even like, you know, I get, you know, they didn't know what they were doing in the whole Darabond of it all, and we didn't prepare. But, you know, but the old doorknob in the first episode, what happened to the ability to turn a doorknob? But the zombies this week, I mean, they seem pretty direct, focused, and quite much more limber and conscious of their choices.
They were fresh.
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that they're fresh. You know,
like even rude?
No, I mean, like, most of the zombies that we see in the 11 years out zombie apocalypse are a little bit worse for the wear. Like, sure. They look like skeletons with, like, flesh falling off of them. And these are fresh zombies. These just got killed.
They may be fresh, but they're still not usually, hey, you over there, I'm coming for you. Look out. Like, this is like, there's a purpose into who they're pursuing here. And they're chewing with vigor. It's not just the, you know, remember when Dale basically got fell on by a zombie? You know, like, that used to be how you died. Oh, I've tripped, I've fallen, and he landed on me. Oh, no. Here it was like, I'm going to shove you to the ground. I'm going to rip and ha-ha, bite you. And I'm going to smile and go, ha-ha-ha-ha, I've got your flesh. There seems to be a little bit more intelligence going on there with these zombies this week.
That's some verve. I'll give you that.
Well, they were
on the don't know if... I don't know if we're pointing to. It seems weird to bring this in at the 11th hour.
Yes. Until you realize that, like, yeah, well, we're setting up three spinoffs. Yeah. We have to, you know, we have to send a team, a clandestine team to Paris. We have to send a clandestine team to New York. We have to, Rick and Michonne have to meet somewhere in Idaho, and these three separate points of interaction. Everyone has to turn a key simultaneously. So all of the variant zombies explode, you know, like we're building to whatever, you know, Walking Dead endgame is. You know, this is the Infinity Saga. Like, we're moving into like phase three, And not that anyone necessarily asked for it, but that's what's happening. So that's why it's being introduced here would be my guess that it's, you know, we're going to get like more sophisticated zombies so that there is more life to the franchise beyond the show. But it is annoying when the show is becoming a commercial for what's next. And I think, you know, this episode, I liked A New Deal. I had fun. It was good. It felt like, okay, well, we're setting things up within the story of what's happening right now. And like, I feel like you're giving us like some clear direction towards the end goals. And the other business of like, we're setting up, you know, spinoff 3, miss me with that. So I hope that it's at least not like overly done and that it's not like an overt focus next time around, but it probably will be. And we'll, you know, sort of like how the even episodes are Michonne and the odds are Rick, it'll be like the even episodes of the final stretch we like and the odd ones we don't.
I'll take that 50-50 at least. I mean, you can't give me 50%.
If we enjoy the evens, then we'll like the finale. So works out.
There we go. Batting 500 is way better than they do most of the time.
Now, yeah, I know Jess is sports incorrectly.
I'm sports incorrectly.
Yes.
You know, my only concern to echo what you said, Josh, though, is that, like, I'm fine if you want to do something that ties in your universes and say, like, yeah, you know, in Fear the Walking Dead, there was like this big nuclear blast and that did something to the virus and that's why they're acting different. I would be cool with like that kind of a tie in here. The problem is we don't have a scientist character who's going to be able to do that research and fill us in, fill our characters in a way that's going to make any sense. So if there was a character like that, you know, if we were in, you know, the world beyond and the scientists there had discovered that, oh, the mutation comes from this explosion that happened in Houston area or whatever, like that would have made sense to me. To just bring it up now with this few episodes left does seem a bit, you know, we know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Is the next great villain of the zombie universe going to be a super evolved zombie who's like a mad scientist zombie like Dr. Zomboss from the Plants vs. Zombies universe?
Yeah.
Should be.
Yes.
It really should be.
Pretty soon they're indistinguishable from the humans again. We've come full circle.
Right. And we're going to, you know, we're going to have characters in our universe, the human characters who dress up like zombies to fit in with a herd. You know, the next step for them is they're going to figure out a way to de-zombify a little bit to like camouflage as humans and live amongst us. I mean, that would be kind of cool.
Here's what I want. You ready? I want that the people who exploded at the CDC in TS-19, their brains were not destroyed. And so their charred, zombified bodies reared up and continued walking around and stumbled into whatever remnants of strange Dr. Jenner experiments were happening and have mutated. And so we get Dr. Jenner and his crew of people who were left behind. I think it was Jenner and that lady.
Jackie.
Jenner and Jackie. They go around and they become smart walkers who trap humans, skin them, and become reverse whisperers. They go around
there you go.
Wearing human suits. And you get Noah Emmerich back on the show as chief antagonist, Zombie Super Jenner. Write me the check now. That idea is not for free.
It's certainly going to live rent-free in my head for a while.
Is the opposite of a whisperer a screamer?
Yeah, they're screamers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. They're shouting.
Yeah, that's how they communicate when they're revealed, just like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the loud talkers.
What's the deal with these loud talkers?
You had walkers, now you've got talkers, you know?
Walking Dead, outside voice.
Yes, I like it. Anything else from this episode that we didn't hit?
We had a tender moment with Negan and Mrs. Negan.
Yes, we sure did. And I've already seen, because this was out on AMC Plus for about a week, and so people watch it on AMC Plus, and you know, you see screenshots that are making the rounds these days. Did you two happen to see the screenshot that was comparing Negan and Annie getting the checkup contrasted with Once Upon a Time back in season 6 of The Walking Dead, this being the exact same shot setup as Maggie and Glenn getting her baby looked at? It is framed exactly. It looks exactly the same. And Walking Dead Twitter, as far as I could tell, they weren't having this. Like, how dare you? How dare you? You keep trying to get me to like Negan as if I'm not remembering what he did to Abraham and to Glenn. And all right, fine. Like, I'll get on board. He's a good, bad guy. And now, like, he seems like he's rehabilitating and fine. Okay. But you're crossing a line when you are doing the direct comp to the man whose brains he bashed, who we liked quite a bit.
Okay, so do you then have a situation? And I like the fact that the scene was there because, it at least gives them a reason to potentially stay versus leave if she needs the medical care. So I'm okay with that. Do you then kill her off because you don't want the baggage of having her and a kid in the Isle of the Dead, whatever, dead again, whatever we're calling that.
Don't blame this on me. Don't say you kill her off.
No. But do we, as the show, the universe, okay, does the universe kill her off where she turns, she gets bit by a zombie, turns, Negan's not there, doesn't know, and he comes into a room where Maggie has to beat her over the head to death, and he sees her killing his beloved. You know, eventually they'll say, funny story, and they'll make up and they'll go on their way. But is that the end game here where she gets to bash his love in?
Yes. Okay. I don't have like elaborate thoughts. I think you're right. I think that Maggie is going to, she would have to be zombified.
Because we don't want to make Maggie Negan.
Yeah. But like, yes, that is like the karma of this universe showing up here in the final season and giving them like something to bring into the big candy apple that is the New York Walking Dead TV show. Jess, do you agree or disagree? I think this is exactly on the money.
I think this sounds right. This sounds poetic. Although I still want to know what happens to Herschel. Like, is Herschel going to the spinoff?
I hope not.
I we could just not know where he is, and that would be fine with me. Or, you know, do they get to their headquarters and say, went to New York? come with if you find this note, and that is their impetus for going there. That would be fine with me.
What if they're going to find Herschel? And then every other episode is Herschel trying to find them.
Does he bring RJ in tow? Because the dialogue for those episodes will be riveting.
Yeah. Oh, also, I'm going to say something right now that's going to get me added by all of Walking Dead Twitter.
Well, then let me just say, you don't have to say whatever this is going to be. So, like, let me just give you a lifeline and tell you that whatever was about to happen doesn't have to happen.
Oh, it has to happen. It has to culminate in the genitals. Come on.
It all culminates in me saying that RJ is the most useless character in the entire Walking Dead universe. He's basically furniture.
In the universe, in the entire universe, he's just charging up. He's charging up. He's plugged into the wall. He's reading his comic books. Invincible is a very creatively violent comic book, and he's soaking it up like a sponge, and he's going to emerge from the cocoon of the other side of Invincible like a renewed, repowered Omni-Man, just ripping zombies apart with his bare hands. The screamers aren't going to know what hit them when RJ shows up with the mustache on and just starts going to town, tearing these guys limb from limb, punching them through the faces and the stomachs. He's gonna be a power player someday.
Michael B. Jordan is RJ.
Yeah.
Okay, that I'm gonna watch, but like, he doesn't do anything useful now.
No,
he's basically just like an extra child, and they give him like one line every five episodes just to remind you he's there. He's entirely fan service for the Rishon people, and he needs to grow a mustache and start kicking ass.
He can absolutely read. That's useful.
Well, you don't know that. He could just be looking at the pictures.
He can look at pictures. He can. He clearly has good taste because he's deep in Invincible, and that's a great comic book.
What if that's the only comic book available?
Well, then he's reading a comic book, and that's cool, even if it's all that's available.
Oh, so Jess, you're saying this is a Station 11 situation?
It's a Station 11 situation, yes.
Oh, man, we got another Station 11 on our hands. More zombies, more plague apocalypses. He can keep a secret.
Can he? Because he never talks.
He just didn't know where she was. I mean, he did kind of blab. He came real quick.
Yeah, he can keep a secret the same way my six-year-old can keep a secret, which is that he completely forgets that it happened.
Useful in a way.
I guess.
He's going to be powerful someday. I hope that RJ and Herschel and Judith are all allowed to live happily ever after in whatever extended safety community exists by the end of this show, so that we can do like the future Walking Dead show someday. Like, that's fun. These are characters who, like, you'll have all this backstory on, and then someday, like, you can have, like, you know, adult actors playing these characters. That would be rad. That would be great.
Are they gonna go to Madison Clark's compound? Is that what's going to happen to them?
Yeah, Gracie and Coco are going to be co-runners, yeah.
I hate it.
Gracie and Coco.
And I know it is unfair to criticize the role of a child, but...
No, we love Judith Grimes from
Judith Grimes is amazing.
So it's not just that it's a child. You know, I even have grown to appreciate Lydia. I thought it was a night, even though it was fan service, for her to at least acknowledge Henry, who wasn't a very popular character. We all know this, but for her to acknowledge Henry in this and like say, hey, that's the kind of an emotional callback that I felt was earned and appreciated. And then, you know, they sent her off to die, which is fine by me. But like, you know, I learned not to hate her so much, you know. We didn't need Enid to stick around another six seasons.
Do we think that the wagon people are doomed?
I think half of them are doomed.
Which ones?
Well, better not be Jerry. But I think it's going to be Jerry.
I think Jerry's in trouble.
I think Aaron's in trouble because he had a big moving goodbye.
I think Elijah's in trouble.
I think they're all in trouble. I think one of them gets out, maybe two.
I think I'd like to see this is tough.
Jerry will sacrifice himself for somebody because that's just who Jerry is. You know, yeah, he'll sacrifice. I could go 50-50 on Aaron. Because it seemed like a goodbye. It seemed like a real goodbye to Gracie, but then Lydia had her moment goodbye, so I think she's definitely toast.
Jerry is gonna have his hold the wagon moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think so.
That sounds right.
I don't want it, but you know what? You need some deaths that you don't want. You need some deaths you don't want.
Aaron could be on that list, but I do think Aaron is like Ross Marquand is like the guy that, like, when they want to do this show eventually of like kids of The Walking Dead as adults, like, he's like old man Aaron, and I want him to stick around.
I think they discovered a chemistry between him and Seth Gilliam that just is undeniable.
Yeah.
And I think that might have saved both of their characters.
I think like you do need to rip our hearts out, but like if Ezekiel is gonna die as well, then like you could probably kill Jerry too, and I don't want that, but I also kind of do, because I do want you to savage me, daddy. So I do think that I want Jerry to die.
I think if it's done right, then yes, I think absolutely that's appropriate. Ezekiel, I think, is a no-brainer, even though I didn't death draft him. Rosita, you know, I picked her for a reason. I think her death would be cool. And I think Eugene, maybe have them go together.
Yeah.
Go out the way they came in.
Yeah. I think that might be an interesting farewell.
I thought for a hot second we were going to lose Eugene this episode, which would have been a choice.
Well, you know, as parents, you make choices, and not all the choices we make at the time seem like they might play out, but best you can do is make those choices, Jess.
Mm, that's what I hear.
But I would, yeah, I think we need 3 to 4 characters like that we know to die over the next like 6 episodes. So minimum.
Yep. So you scored first blood on this death draft.
Here. Here's your first blood on me.
It was you.
I don't even remember who I drafted.
I'm looking it up if you could filibuster for 5 seconds.
Okay.
Well, I could filibuster, say, it was not my decision to play that.
Eugene.
I did.
It was 5 seconds. We got it. I'm there. I have it. I have
the list. Okay. Well, you know, I'll be over here in the corner. If you need me, I'll be right back here.
Everyone's got 2. So okay. AJ is 50% of the way there.
Okay. So let's run down who everybody picked.
Okay. So AJ, first blood, Sebastian, dead. AJ has also selected Rosita.
I have.
AJ stands a chance, I think, of 100% here. I have selected Lance Hornsby, which is like a when, not if.
I believe so, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I have selected Annie, Negan's wife. I also think a when, not if.
I think you will also be at 100, I think, yeah.
Jess, you selected Governor Pamela.
Okay.
Which is an if for me.
Yeah, maybe. I didn't select good.
You also did select Jerry, who we're discussing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was mostly trying to protect him by making a terrible choice that was definitely going to be wrong.
That may have backfired.
Might have.
Chappelle selected Ezekiel. Feels like a when, not an if. And he also selected Max Patkin.
Okay.
Who I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know that she's... I mean, I guess it's important to Eugene. Maybe they'll go... Maybe the three of them...
Eugene looks like he's in trouble.
Maybe Eugene, Max, and Rosita all die in a fire. Or something.
Next week seems like it's going to be Benny Hilltop, and everyone's just running around looking for Eugene.
Oh, if we get Yakety Sax, double points for you.
You know, I do usually.
It's the comic book zone. Yeah.
I usually do watch it on 1.5 speed, so.
I think that'd be great. Music episode. Well, okay, well, that's the death draft as it currently stands. So one down for AJ, getting close. He's got one more to go, and the rest of us still have some work here to do.
Yeah, so who gets the T-Dog cameo then?
Maybe the loser gets it and is eviscerated by T-Dog.
Okay, I like
it. Can we instruct T-Dog to be mean to the
please,
loser?
Please roast my friend Jess, who picked poorly.
In a charming way that won't break her spirits.
Yes.
Permanently.
It's a fine line to tread, but I think T-Dog's up for the challenge.
And make sure you culminate. Never mind.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the culmination of this podcast, everyone.
Yes.
So now we get to the part where we talk about what everybody has going on this week. AJ, how is the world of Criminal Minds?
It's very criminal. A lot of minds going on. No, it's going good. Floodies Pundits, the rewatch continues. Season 4, moving onward. We're very, very close to the infamous Luke Perry episode. So stay tuned for that.
Good stuff. Josh Wigler, what's going on with you this week?
More House of the Dragons, of course. It's just Game of Thrones all the time up in here for me. We've got plenty of that. We've got the Interview with the Vampire podcast coverage, as I told you. The people like it. I'm telling you, people are enjoying the Interview with the Vampire. They're not saying Strigoi, Jess Lees.
I had an unpopular opinion. Everybody seems to be uniformly loving Interview with the Vampire. And I'm over here like feeling like they missed the point of Interview with the Vampire, supposed to be fun, bad, and by trying to make it good. But everybody says, no, they succeeded in making it
they
good.
They made it good. They made it good.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm still holding out for Lasher. So,
so that's happening here on post-show recaps. Excitingly, Jess, at this point in time, I believe we are able to just unveil that the Mole Patrol is indeed back. And it's you, it's me, it's Brooklyn Zed with the prestigious and credit of podcast founder himself, Rob Cesternino, joining us, looking for clues and trying to get a call from Andy Koops, who is uninvolved in the Mole reboot, but very fun for a limited engagement because Netflix is cool that way, right? They're dropping big chunks of episodes at a time. You would think maybe it would make our lives harder. It actually makes the choice easier that we can talk about these episodes in the batches. So we've got like a month-long Mole Patrol reunion plus Rob. Really fun time over at RHAP. Rob has a podcast. Check it out if you are a fan of The Mole. It's on Netflix. First five episodes are out. We will have a podcast about the first five episodes coming your way pretty soon. Not out yet, but the first episode, our announcement talking about the first episode of The Mole is up. So that's exciting, Jess. I'm thrilled to find like a way to bring it back that actually makes sense for our schedules and our lives.
Yeah, I really could not be here for weekly Mole installments for the rest of my life because it's not the summer of 2020. We're not all in lockdown and I am working 40 hours a week.
Right.
And so I'm also covering all things Amazing Race over on Rob's podcast. And every week we get together, Rob Cesternino and Mike Bloom and I get together to talk about everything that happened on the Amazing Race, as well as Rob and I then interview the latest team to get kicked off. And last week we got to talk with Rex Ryan and that was pretty fun. Rex Ryan and also Tim, his partner. And I got to watch Rob Cesternino get as starstruck as I've ever seen him get. And I actually had to ask some real questions because I was worried about Rob. It was a good time. We both comported ourselves very well. And it was a fun episode. So every week, check us out for all your Amazing Race needs. And over on here on post-show recaps, anything scripted, we're basically covering all of it. Like prestige and less prestige. There's a million things going on post-show recaps. And of course, if you want to become a patron of us, you get lots of extra perks, including extra podcasts in your feed and access to the patron Discord, which is where all of the really good conversations happen these days. It's really, if what you're missing from the podcast experience is the interactivity, like if this is starting to feel very parasocial to you, go to the Discord and meet some people and interact with them and get back what you're putting out there. You know?
Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. It's been 2 years of the PSR patron experience. So it's a great time to sign up. Happy anniversary to us. And Patreon just unveiled subscription billing. So you don't have to wait until the beginning of the month anymore. You just sign up whenever. You'll get charged a month later. Easy peasy. So if it's just like a random Sunday night, let's say, theoretically, say it's October 9th, or maybe even a Monday, October 10th, and you're on your way to work, you're like, yeah, these people deserve $5. You can just go patreon.com/postshowrecaps right now and do that. That'd be great. We would love that. And if not, no sweat. You could just subscribe to the podcast, leave a rating and review. That's also greatly appreciated here around these parts on post-show recaps.
Yep, it all helps us keep the lights on one way or the other. And I think, though, at this point, we are here till the bitter end of at least Walking Dead Prime. So you have nothing to fear. We're going to see it through to the bitter end. Maybe not the bitter, bitter end. We're going to see how badly it disappoints us. But yeah, we'll be here next week to talk about the next thing that's happening. We're going to talk about the variants, I guess. And until then, thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next week.